Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guests are the odd couple of the legal world these days. Superstar attorneys Ted Olson and David Boies will go down in history for arguing Bush v. Gore against each other at the Supreme Court after the year 2000 November election. Olson went on to be President Bush's Solicitor General. But in the last few years, they have joined forces to bring suit against Proposition 8 in California, the voter referendum that outlawed same-sex marriage. Ted Olson and David Boies will be appearing together tonight at the 92nd Street Y, and they are appearing together here right now. Mr. Boies and Mr. Olson, thank you so much for doing this with us today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Ted Olson, as a longtime advocate for conservative and Republican positions, you're the one who crossed party lines here, or ideological lines. Can you tell our listeners why?
Well, in the first place, I think David and I both agree on this. This is not and should not be a party line or a partisan issue. Discrimination against so many of our citizens on the basis of their sexual orientation and withholding from them one of the basic fundamental rights protected by our Constitution should not be a conservative or liberal position, and I don't think it is. I've written extensively and argued that marriage between individuals who love one another, who want to be a part of our community, is a conservative value. But of course it's also a liberal value. Conservatives don't own it. Liberals don't own it. Republicans, to the extent that there are more Republicans that are opposed, at least at this time, to same-sex marriage or marriage between individuals of the same sex, are changing and changing rapidly, as is the general population. So I think one of the most important messages that David and I, working together, can communicate to the American people is that this is about justice and dignity and fairness and non-discrimination, and we all should be behind it.
You talk about how the population, including the Republican population, is changing on this. Is support for marriage equality a position that you have long held, or did you come to change your mind on it at some point?
I don't think that marriage equality itself or marriage, the issue of marriage, has been in the forefront of American political life for quite that long. But I have always believed that we cannot, must not, and shall not discriminate against our fellow citizens on the basis of their sexual orientation. Sexual orientation is a characteristic that individuals, by and large, are born with. I did not choose to be a heterosexual any more than the people that we're representing choose to be homosexuals. And discrimination, excluding people from the basic parts of our society on that basis seems to me wrong. It's always seemed to me to be wrong. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to marriage, that's particularly important because marriage is such an important building block of our society and such a fundamental right for individuals.
I want to correct something that I said earlier about your event. I said it was going to be tonight. It's actually tomorrow night, right? Tuesday night at the 92nd Street Y, the two of you will be speaking.
Yes, that is correct, and I'm glad you corrected it. It went right past me.
Mr. Boies, how did the two of you come to work together on this? Who called you? Who called who? And have you guys, you know, been friends or anything? People think of you as on the opposite sides of, you know, one of the biggest cases in our lifetime that decided the presidency in effect in 2000.
Sure, and we of course were on opposite sides in that case, and have been on opposite sides in some other issues. But we've worked together as well, and we've been good friends. Ted and his wife and Mary, my wife and I, go biking together every year in Europe. We enjoy working together, and we had looked, I think, for a while on a cause that we could come together on and work together on. And when this came up, Ted called me and asked me if I'd be interested in working with him on this case. And as he said a couple of times, it took me less than a second to say yes.
You know, a fair number of marriage equality advocates, as I understand it, did not want you to bring suit in federal court. They've been afraid that the Supreme Court, where the case may well wind up eventually, is too conservative and not inclined in general to get in front on an issue like this. So it could set back the marriage equality movement rather than advance it. Better to go state by state, they say. Mr. Boies, are you not concerned about that?
Well, you're always concerned about what's going to happen. However, I think there are three or four real good reasons why this kind of litigation was appropriate to bring at the time. First, going into federal court does not in any way preclude you from going state by state. Indeed, we've continued to go state by state while this litigation has been pending. And as you know, New York adopted marriage equality legislatively just in the last year.
Right.
So this is in addition, not instead of, a state-by-state process. The second thing is that we have clients whose constitutional rights are being violated every day. And it's hard to say to those clients, no, you've got to wait another generation before you can have marriage equality. I think that Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail says it best, you know, when he talks about how long do people wait and how long do you put up with discrimination without trying to remedy it.
David.
I think the third point, and this is very important, I think, is that this case, I think, has helped shape the debate. I think this case has helped move people. It's drawn attention to the issue. And this is an issue that can't withstand scrutiny. When people look at it, I think they come out only one way. I think the way that people in this country tolerate discrimination is by not understanding it, not understanding the way that it harms people and the rationality of discrimination. When you put scrutiny on it, which this lawsuit has, I think that not only advances legal rights, I think that advances public debate.
David Boies and Ted Olson, who famously argued against each other in Bush versus Gore, now arguing with each other against California's Proposition 8. They'll be appearing at the 92nd Street Y tomorrow. Bill Keller will be moderating that, by the way, the recent executive editor of the New York Times. Mr. Olson, the status of the case is that you won the last round. A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down Prop 8 on equal protection grounds. Was the key there that it would unmarry couples who were already married when it was legal in California?
That was a part of what the court decided. First of all, we did prevail in the United States District Court in San Francisco. The court there issued a 134-page opinion containing exhaustive findings of fact and conclusions of law with respect to the issues in that case. And that went up on appeal. And as you said, a panel of the Court of Appeals affirmed that decision. A part of the rationale was that in California, the California Supreme Court had declared that under the California Constitution, individuals had the right to get married, even to someone of the same sex. Then Proposition 8 came along and took away that constitutional right, citing a couple of important decisions from the United States Supreme Court, including a case called Romer from the state of Colorado, where the Supreme Court of the United States held that taking away of individual rights based upon sexual orientation in Colorado violated the Constitution because it was ripping away someone's constitutionally protected rights. And the court in California, in our case, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, said that that was an important consideration. But beyond that, what the Court of Appeals did in the Ninth Circuit case is systematically looked at all of the arguments that were made in favor of Proposition 8 by the proponents and found no rational basis for those arguments. In other words, there was no legitimate state interest in taking away the rights of individuals to get married to someone of the same sex. It didn't advance procreation. It didn't adversely affect the rights of other people to get married and so forth. So the decision is a very, very important, significant decision, pronouncing the rights of individuals with respect to persons of the same sex.
And now it goes to the full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and then maybe to the Supreme Court. We're going to take a break, and we're going to continue with David Boies and Ted Olson. And one of the things we'll talk about is that both Bush v. Gore and Prop 8 involve the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, the 14th Amendment, and how the federal government has the right to tell a state that they are violating that. So we'll tie Bush v. Gore and Proposition 8 on gay marriage together with Ted Olson and David Boies in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with attorneys David Boies and Ted Olson, probably best known when spoken in the same breath when their names are, for arguing against each other in Bush versus Gore. They are now working together fighting California's Proposition 8, which banned same-sex marriage in a voter referendum out there, working to fight that in federal court. We can take some phone calls for them on their work past or present, 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692, or post your comment or question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And I want to, if you're willing, go back to Bush v. Gore a little bit and then circle back around through that to some legal similarities in the two cases. David Boies, how do you look back on Bush v. Gore? Has it ever kept you awake at night wondering, if only I had done this or that differently that day?
Well, I suppose you always think about that, but I think the five judges in the majority were pretty clear about where they were, and I don't think that there was an argument out there that we didn't come up with that might have persuaded them.
You got your Proposition 8 ruling on equal protection grounds recently, and Bush v. Gore was also decided largely on that 14th Amendment provision, that it was not okay in the Florida recount that different counties had different standards for qualifying ballots. Therefore, someone who lived in a butterfly ballot county, say, had a greater chance of having their vote disqualified than someone who lived in an optical scanner county, because those were better machines. Looking back, Ted Olson, how important was that?
Well, David and I disagree a little bit on the jurisprudence that was involved and so forth, but I do think, and I'll just give my perspective, of course, not David's, is that the equal protection component in Bush versus Gore was tied in with the Due Process Clause of the Constitution. And the same is true in the Proposition 8 litigation. In Bush versus Gore, we expressed the concern not just that ballots were being evaluated differently from county to county, but that the rules were being changed during the process. There had been a change in the method and the timetables for counting ballots after the election, and in fact, in some counties, they were changing the rules as they went along from hour to hour. In California, we believe that that is very important, that the rules should be established before the election with respect to post-election counting, and that they should be evaluated relatively equally. Nothing can be perfect, but from county to county or state to state. With respect to Proposition 8 in California, we talk about the fact that the right to marriage is a fundamental right, just like the right to vote or to have one's vote be counted, and that the rules can't keep being changed. People can't be treated differently in one area than another area. California has a crazy system whereby the people that were married between the time when the California Supreme Court said it was permissible and Proposition 8 were allowed to remain married, whereas other people, but they couldn't get divorced and even remarry the same people, whereas other people before and after Proposition 8 were being denied that right. In other words, people, our citizens, with respect to a fundamental right, were being treated differently and capriciously. And I'm sure that David and I would disagree a little bit about the similarities between the case, but in a general principle basis, I would argue that That's a comparable principle.
Mr. Boies, I always thought that Gore won Florida, but not necessarily because of the ballots that you petitioned to recount, which might have gone either way. I thought the bigger issue was the poorly designed ballots in Palm Beach County that wound up apparently with thousands of people punching the card for Pat Buchanan, thinking they were voting for Gore. Do you believe that happened, and did you consider at the time making that a part of the case in state court?
Sure. Not only did I believe that happened, but Pat Buchanan said it happened. But there's a difference between something that costs you the election and something that can be corrected as a matter of law. The ballot problem in Palm Beach County with a butterfly ballot was probably something that you could not get a remedy for, because the only remedy would be to revote. You couldn't bring people in and say, I voted for Gore, I thought I was voting for Gore, but I actually punched Buchanan, because there's no way to prove that once you've left the polling place. And you can't really have a revote, most people think, under the Constitution, in a presidential election. So that was something that there simply wasn't a remedy for, although there was clearly a wrong.
Let's take a phone call. Jim in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with David Boies and Ted Olson. Hello.
Hi. I had actually 2 points. One was, wasn't it correct that when they had the presidential election for when Obama was elected, that his coattails brought in a lot of African Americans who would not otherwise have voted, and they helped to bring in Proposition 8? That's one point.
Go ahead with your other one.
Yeah.
What's your other point?
The other point is the metaphysical. This is not strictly a political. It's a metapolitical question. I think I sent you an email once about the language, how the language has been hijacked. And this is actually, I don't call it knowledge equality. I call it mockery marriage. And the reason why I say that is because of the Talmudic point that the generation of the flood did not have their fate sealed until they started issuing contracts for mockery marriages. And likewise, the people of Sodom, Sodom and Gomorrah, it says in the Talmud that their fate was also not sealed as much as they did wrong until they issued mockery marriage contracts.
Jim, I'm going to leave it there, and I apologize. We're going to have the Talmudic discussion another day when we have Talmudic scholars on the show. Today we have lawyers, David Boies and Ted Olson. But on his first point, which is really a political analysis point, Mr. Boies, that African Americans voted primarily in favor of Proposition 8, in other words, against legal same-sex marriage, in the same election in which they turned out in greater numbers for President Obama than they had in the past, recent past elections in California. What do you think he's right on the facts, and what's the significance of that, if any?
I think that a lot of people have made comments similar to his, and I think it is true that more African Americans did participate in the election, which I think was a very good thing. I think that a majority, not a large majority, but a majority of them, like a majority of non-African American voters, supported the proposition. I think that was a product of the scare advertising that the proponents of Proposition 8 put out there. I think that one of the things that has happened since then is I think people have taken a harder and better look at this issue, and I am hopeful that that election were repeated, you would not have anything like that result. I also think that one of the things that's happened, this goes back to a question you raised earlier, the divide here I don't think is between conservatives and liberals or Republicans and Democrats. The divide here is between people who are very old and people who are very young. More than 70% of the people who are 35 and under in this country support marriage equality. I think that what you see is every year more and more of those younger generation coming into the voting age, and I think that's what's causing the shift. I think it's much less to do with race, much less to do with political affiliation, than it simply is a tidal wave of demographic.
Mr. Olson, I'm curious about your relationship to both of these cases as a founding member of the Federalist Society. which is the legal affairs group, for people who don't know, that believes in federalism, states' rights, when at all feasible. And yet President Bush got into office partly by you arguing to the Supreme Court to have the federal government overturn the way the state of Florida chose to count its votes as passed by the legislature and ruled on by the state's courts, to Democrats. Overruling that from Washington was one of the great acts of federalist hypocrisy in American history. And on Proposition 8, here you are again, asking the federal government to step on a state, in this case a constitutional amendment initiated and voted on by the people in a statewide referendum. Why should federal courts get involved in that at all? And do you have to challenge your own, you know, general viewpoint on that in order to take the sides you have in these cases?
Well, first of all, I probably ought to liberate the federal society from my views. The federal society is an organization of individuals that believe, generally speaking, in individual liberty, limited government, free enterprise, and that sort of thing. And the federal society has never had positions on issues itself. It doesn't file briefs and that sort of, doesn't file resolutions and so forth. Mm-hmm. It is a society that believes in open and robust debate, so that federal society, for example, has had and will continue to have debates upon marriage equality and same-sex marriage. Secondly, it is very important to understand that we have a Constitution of the United States that protects individual liberties and individual rights. In connection with the Florida Bush versus Gore situation, the United States Supreme Court handled the case twice. The first time the Supreme Court handled the case, it vacated a Florida Supreme Court decision and sent it back to Florida 9-0 on the grounds, in part, that this was a federal election and what citizens in one state could do could affect the outcome of a federal election and therefore the votes of persons in every state. Therefore, the federal constitution was a very important component in that process. And in the second decision, seven of the justices agreed that there was some concern with respect to the Equal Protection Clause of the federal constitution concerning how those votes were being counted. In California, David and I have both made the same point. We don't put individual rights under the Constitution up to a vote. Many, many states of the United States had racial discrimination. Many states of the United States just not too many years ago prohibited interracial marriages, and the United States Supreme Court looked to the federal Constitution, the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause of the federal Constitution, to strike down those prohibitions. The same issue is involved in this case. We have in this country a protection of the Constitution and an independent judiciary precisely because minorities often lose their rights when they're put up to a vote, and that's when it's important to be able to resort to the courts.
My guests are attorneys Ted Olson, who was just speaking, and David Boies. They famously argued against each other in Bush versus Gore. They are now working together to defeat California's Proposition 8, which bans same-sex marriage, to defeat it in federal court. They will be speaking together at the 92nd Street Y tomorrow night. Adam in the Cayman Islands. You're on WNYC. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for calling in. You could just be enjoying the tropical sunshine, but instead you're listening to this Legal Affairs show.
Yeah, calling from Romney country. Just kidding.
Right. They had a primary. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I had a question for Mr. Olson. He worked in the Bush administration, and I was wondering how that was, being that he's on such a different side of this issue. I recall Bush's main argument, which I always thought was a thinly veiled religious argument, speciously, I think he said that he thought it was because marriage traditionally was between a man and a woman. Sorry, I almost slipped into a Bush impression. But that was his argument, and it sounds like Mr. Olson disagreed with that. So I just wondered if he had difficult moments where he had to bite his tongue, or if it was just difficult to work having such a different viewpoint.
Right. And I don't think President Obama, by the way, has come to support legal same-sex marriage yet either. But Ted Olson, go ahead.
Well, Well, I think that's a very good question. It's a perfectly legitimate one. I disagreed then, and I disagree now, with the position that the Bush administration took with respect to discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation in the case of marriage. I was asked whether I thought a constitutional amendment was something that the administration would support, should support. I said no, and I said I would vote against it, and I said that I would speak out against it. That position wasn't taken until after I left the administration. No cause or effect there. But it is always the case, I think David would agree, that when you are a part of an administration, there are things that you agree with and things that you don't agree with. As Solicitor General of the United States, I was never asked to take a position on this issue. Had that issue come up during my tenure as Solicitor General, I would have strongly argued in favor of equality for individuals on the basis of their sexual orientation. And I hope that we're getting to the point, as David said, because there's a change in people's attitudes. We're getting to the point where we're going to, in this country, start to recognize the equality of our citizens and to eliminate this very important last vestige of state-sponsored discrimination in this country.
But then, David Boies, is there no principle in the argument of constitutional law, the practice of constitutional law, really? Everyone is arguing for the policy outcomes they want to see on same-sex marriage, presidential power over detainees, affirmative action, pick your issue, and using the Constitution simply as an available weapon?
I think people make arguments under the Constitution, but I don't think that that means that the Constitution is devoid of principle. I think that the principle of equal protection, that every citizen ought to have an equal right to vote, an equal right to marry, an equal right to go to school, an equal right to have their children treated fairly, is something that is in the Constitution. Now, we can argue about how to apply that in particular cases.
And marriage was the furthest thing from their mind, opponents will say. They didn't have same-sex marriage on their radar at all when the 14th Amendment was drafted.
I think that when the 14th Amendment was drafted, what they had in their mind was eliminating racial discrimination in the South and protecting African Americans in the South from retaliation by the former white people in power in that region. On the other hand, when you write a constitution, the principles that you write control, not the motivation for the original writing of it. We apply the First Amendment, for example, to radio and to television, even though nobody conceived of radio and television at the time that the Constitution was written. So it's not a question of saying, were people thinking about this issue? The question is whether or not the Constitution, constitutional principle that they were thinking about applied. And Ted and I can, you know, disagree as to which way equal protection cuts in Bush v. Gore, but I think that we would both agree that the Equal Protection Clause is something that it's important to apply to elections.
We have about 3-4 minutes left. I wonder if I could get brief responses from you both on two other things that are in the news right now. One is, since your case is going to the Ninth Circuit, I guess the 2-1 decision was a panel within the Ninth Circuit. Now the whole thing is going to hear it. San Francisco-based, known as a liberal court, enough so that Newt Gingrich has said in his presidential campaign that he might seek to eliminate it from the federal court system. He has also said, as president, he would feel it was his right to ignore certain Supreme Court rulings, alarming to many as a threat to the rule of law, which holds our democracy together. How important it was that Al Gore, after that Supreme Court ruling in 2000, immediately conceded and said, for the peaceful transition of democracy, for the rule of law in the United States, I, you know, vigorously disagree with this, but I concede right now. But here's a clip of Newt Gingrich speaking recently on the Ninth Circuit.
I've been working on this project since 2002, when the Ninth Circuit Court said that one nation under God is unconstitutional in the Pledge of Allegiance, and I decided if you had judges who were so radically anti-American that they thought one nation under God was wrong, they shouldn't be on the court. Now, we have...
Ted Olson, would you take up that argument if you were his Solicitor General?
Well, the eliminating the Ninth Circuit, I disagree with that. And I think that some of the proposals that get raised during elections, people disagreeing with judicial decisions and therefore wanting to eliminate judges or particular courts, it's wrong. We are the independent judiciary that we have in this country. We will each disagree with particular decisions from time to time. The particular case that he was referring to there was reversed by the United States Supreme Court by an independent judiciary. We cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater every time that we disagree with the judicial decision. Judges are in this country extremely respected. They don't always get everything right, but in the long run, we are better off with an independent judiciary than to start striking out at individual judges or individual courts when we disagree.
And David Boies, on another issue entirely, Citizens United. Here is former Democratic Senator Russ Feingold on our show a few weeks ago predicting that it's actually possible that the Supreme Court majority may be so embarrassed by what they have wrought here that they might actually reverse itself on this relatively soon, that's soon in Supreme Court years. Listen to Russ Feingold.
All they have to say is this was a bad decision. We reconsider. And courts do this all the time. The Supreme Court doesn't do it all the time, but it is so out of line with the law of the last 100 years that I don't think it would be a big deal for the court to say, well, and then they always have a way to sort of say, well, this case is a little different, so yeah, this is why it's okay. Believe me, that's the least of their problems.
So that's Russ Feingold. I even heard that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, said something about how the Supreme Court maybe should revisit this, even though that would be so highly unusual to do it so quickly. David Boies, do you see any realistic chance, given your experience arguing before the Supreme Court?
I don't think there's any realistic chance that the current Supreme Court is going to reverse Citizens United. This happens to be one of the things that Ted and I disagree on. I think that Citizens United is wreaking havoc, not just on the Democrats, but on the Republicans as well. I think it was an undesirable decision, but I don't think that it's going to get reversed without a change in membership of the Supreme Court.
Ted Olson, I'll give you the last word. We got 30 seconds.
Well, the Supreme Court of the United States decided that corporations, which include the American Civil Liberties Union and the National Rifle Association and unions such as the AFL-CIO, have a right to express their opinions as to whether a particular policy embodied by a particular candidate is right or wrong and to inform the American people. The Supreme Court, applying the First Amendment, said more speech is better than less speech and the government shouldn't pick winners or losers.
Ted Olson and David Boies, most well known for arguing Bush v. Gore against each other once upon a time, now teaming up to fight Proposition 8, and they will be speaking together and moderated by recent New York Times executive editor Bill Keller at the 92nd Street Y tomorrow night. Mr. Boies, Mr. Olson, fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for speaking your minds and doing some of it here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, did you listen to WNYC over the weekend? If so, you probably know about the Mike Daisy, This American Life, Apple Story disaster. We will talk about truth, lies, and audio tape with Brooke Gladstone from On the Media and Rob Schmitz, the Marketplace reporter who uncovered the fraud. What should we think now about the working conditions where your iPods, iPads, iPhones, and Macs are made? Stay with us.